This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Jeff Palermo producing today. Our regular producer, Matt Doyle, is still quarantined, as is our first guest, Jeannie Smith of Louisiana Public Broadcasting, a colleague of mine at the Louisiana Radio Network for many years, and she went to Italy on the 29th of last month, and as you know, the world changed in an immense way, not only in our country, but all over the world. And Italy has been the country hardest hit by deaths from coronavirus. And I'm pulling up the latest right now. In the world right now, China still has more cases, 81,171. But Italy has more deaths than anybody, 6,077. 63,927 reported cases, 6,077 deaths in Italy, a country that has 60 million people. Spain, by the way, which has 47 million people, has 2,696 deaths, so it has been hit hard as well. The USA is in third place. We'd rather not be rising on the charts, but we are, with 46,168 cases. And as we know, the cases continue in big numbers in Louisiana, big numbers relative to the rest of the country. We now have one of the highest growth rates, unfortunately, of COVID-19 of any place on the earth. And let's hope that changes. 877-217-5757 if you would like to join the conversation. And it's always great to hear Jeannie Smith's voice. But you have been behind closed doors for a little while now. First of all, let's start with a trip to Italy. You leave on the 29th, and I remember I was in the airport with you. I was going to Atlanta.
Right.
I was going to Atlanta, and you were going
right
to Rome, but and not Rome, Georgia either. This was simmering, but at that time there were only 350 tests given in the whole country for coronavirus in the month of February. 350 in the whole country, and you were leaving the last day of February. What happened after you got to Italy?
Well, we had no trouble getting over there. We actually flew in through Paris, not through Rome. And, you know, we saw a few people running around the Charles de Gaulle airport with masks and things like that, but nothing that would alarm you. As soon as we got off the plane in Florence, which was the final destination, we were met by people in, you know, full-on hazmat-type medical gear, and they scanned our temperature before we were allowed into the main airport. So that was sort of the greeting that we got. But, you know, it wasn't. They just scanned our temperature and said, welcome to Florence. I mean, that was pretty much the extent of it. It wasn't any more alarming than, you know, seeing the people in Paris with the face mask on.
And you had intended to stay there for a few weeks, correct?
Yes, that's correct. We had a two-week vacation plan there.
And how long did you end up staying, Jeannie?
We ended up staying just shy of the 2 weeks. We ended up losing 2 days off the vacation, so 12 days.
And since you're saying we, I think we can tell you're going with your partner in life.
My longtime boyfriend at this point. Yes, he is from Florence, Italy, and his mother had actually had some real health issues at the beginning of the year, and she's quite elderly, and so we did not want to delay. It had been 2 years since he had seen her, and he did not want to delay any further a visit with his mom.
How's his
mom? In spite of the circumstances.
How is she doing?
She's very well because she's basically been shut in the house for the last, you know, 6 months or so. So she hasn't been out and about and exposed to anything.
Now, we heard those horror stories about how challenging it was to get back to the United States. Did you have any hurdles doing that?
Yes. That was probably the worst of it. I mean, we basically had a wonderful vacation the first week. It was, you know, really nice to be able to get into places where the crowds were so few and that sort of thing. But then by the ninth, which was when Italy made the decision to basically lock down the country like our governor did yesterday, And at that point, we started really getting nervous. And, you know, people from the States were blowing me up, blowing up the phone, you know, saying, y'all got to get out of there. Y'all got to get out of there. And then sure enough, like within the next day, the airline had actually canceled our flight. And so at that point, it was just this mad scramble trying to, you know, find out if we were going to be compensated for that flight, find out if we had any recourse, try to rebook something. And we didn't end up doing that until that Friday. Well, we thought we had rebooked flights leaving on the day that we originally had intended. But then on Friday, they made the decision to close the Florence airport. And so we had to get out of there on Friday. And we literally caught the last flight out of Florence, Italy at 8:20 on the 13th.
And you got back. So what route did you take?
Back.
How did you get back?
We flew from Florence to Paris and then from Paris back to Atlanta.
And then
from Atlanta to Baton Rouge.
We saw these lines at airports of people being herded like sardines. Did you run into any of that?
No, and that was the insane part. I mean, when we pulled up at the jetway, the pilot told us that we wouldn't be allowed to deplane until the CDC had cleared the plane. And they told us that they would be boarding. So we thought it was going to be over. We were like, oh, God, we're not, there's no way we're going to make our connection, you know, that type of thing. And so the CDC workers came on with the Atlanta Police Department, and, you know, which was a little intimidating, but they passed out a one-page questionnaire, and the shocking thing was that the questionnaire only dealt with travel to China. There were like two questions. One, have you been to Huawei province, and have you been around anyone that has? Those were the questions on there. And I mean, this is a plane full of people who had just come from Europe. So that was really weird. And then after we finished filling out the questionnaire, they told us that we could get off in like groups of say 25 to 30 people, and we go down the jetway, and they're standing at the entrance are, you know, another group of CDC people, mm-hmm. and there were like six of them. Two of them weren't doing anything. Two of them had handouts, and then one of them had a scanning thermometer, and we just walked right by all these people. They did give us the handouts, which were about COVID-19 and self-quarantining and that sort of thing, but that was pretty much it. They didn't take our temperature.
How long have you been in your house now, basically away from ordinary life?
We have been in the apartment since the 14th, since we got back. So
the 14th, so 10 days.
Yeah, 10 days.
And are you feeling okay?
Yeah. Neither of us has had any temperature or any symptoms. I mean, my allergies started as soon as we got back.
Well, at some point, you're probably clear because this apparently has the longest incubation period is 2 weeks. So I would think if you can last another 4 days, you can get out and about. But we're in uncertain territory, uncharted waters, as we know. But this is something I'm sure many people here, your colleagues at Louisiana Public Broadcasting, where Jeannie is the underwriting director, were alarmed that you were over there and had a possibility of not coming back anytime soon.
Yes. I had a lot of concern phone calls from everybody. It's really nice to be appreciated in that way. But, yes, everyone was quite concerned. Well, right. We were quite concerned for a few hours there, we didn't know we were going to get to come back.
Now, a listener asked if you have been tested.
I have not, no.
And I think you told me, if I heard you right, that you have not seen a medical a physician or anybody in the medical community at this point.
No, not at this point. Mm-mm.
Yeah, so it's... It's a case in which you're feeling fine. You probably did not get coronavirus, and at this point, most people still are not getting it. But the concern is that there will be an overwhelming number of people who get it all at once, and the hospitals and medical facilities will be overwhelmed. But you went to Italy and lived to talk about it, and I'm sure your companion has great empathy for what's happening to people in his country.
Yes, he's monitoring it very carefully. It weighs on him very heavily.
Well, Jeannie, we wish you well, and glad you're back home safe and sound, and I'm sure you'll be back to work very soon. Thanks for sharing your story.
Oh, I started back to work on last Tuesday, so thankfully we're set up to telework, yeah.
It's hard to make a sale from your apartment, though, but if anybody can do it, it's Jeannie Smith. She's one of the good ones, so it's great to hear you laugh, too. I'm sure there were moments when you weren't laughing very much.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Jim, and hope we all can stay well and the state can pull through this thing.
Well, thanks for talking. Jeannie Smith from Louisiana Public Broadcasting, and on deck is the Lieutenant Governor, William Harold Nungesser. He'll talk about coronavirus and COVID-19 in our state when we return after this 90-second pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Jeff Palermo is producing today, the gentleman who is the news and sports director and affiliate relations director for the Louisiana Radio Network, and he is doing quadruple duty today. And we're joined by William Harold Nungesser, Billy Nungesser, the Lieutenant Governor of Louisiana, who went to O. Perry Walker in New Orleans, and Orleans Parish has 567 known cases of coronavirus. And to put this in perspective, the largest country in the world is India. India, with 1.5 billion people. They have 519 reported cases right now. And one of the reasons given is that it's hot in India. The weather is apparently a panacea of sorts for coronavirus. And it's getting hotter here. Temperatures should reach the 90s this week. And that could help us. But between now and then, one of the hottest cities in the world, New Orleans, is a hot spot for COVID-19. And the latest is that the New Orleans Archbishop says he has tested positive, Gregory Amond. And he's a 70-year-old man. So anybody of that age, I saw the other day, the mortality rate for those over 70 who contract this is 1 in 7. So let's hope and pray that the Archbishop recovers. And Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, you're out and about. You're about my age, which means you're just over 60 years old, and you're in danger. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's going to be a long, you know, this is something we're not never seen before. And you know, to think about 2 weeks ago, we had our first case, and here we are today with 34 deaths and over 1,000 people infected. This thing has ramped up really quickly. And is having a devastating effect, not only on the people that it's affected, but also on our economy.
AJ writes, I've been trying unsuccessfully for unemployment since March 12th. Twice early last week I was able to get a human and fax my information, but still no reply. I'm still locked out. I haven't been able to get through to a person since last Wednesday. I'm beyond worried and angry since benefits start from when you first applied, not when you were first out of work. So he says there are hundreds more like me. Look at the Facebook page, New Orleans Service Industry. What are we supposed to do? These are areas that, of course, the governor of the state is more intricately involved, but I know you're following everything quite closely, Lieutenant Governor.
Absolutely. As soon as I get off the phone, I will follow up on that. I know they had some problems with the site, because of overload, as everything has been, but I'll follow up on that and get the governor's people to post something and see what we can do to correct that.
Jim Madden, who's a mathematician, teaches at LSU. He says there was a sudden rise in case reports in Louisiana between March 9 and March 16th. He says, but over the last 5 days, the growth rate in reported cases in Louisiana has been about 30%. Per day, which is close to the national rate of increase. So he says things are leveling off. And the way this works is that in Louisiana, we had 2 cases 1 week, then 20 cases the following week. So that's a 10 times increase. The the way to bring this down and level that curve is to knock those percentages down. So let's say we knock it down to 5% this week. That still means there are going to be 100 cases next week, but the percentages are going down, and that's what we're trying to do with this social distancing. But you're in the business of promoting Louisiana and people mingling and hugging and loving each other, Billy Nungesser, and going to state parks. How are the parks doing, and have you had to close them all?
Well, three of them have been are being used by the governor's team to house patients. And yesterday, any of the people at the state parks that felt uncomfortable working, we're letting going home. We're going to operate with our skeleton crews. We still have to cut the grass, and we still want to leave those parks open for people to go on the walking trails. It's a place for them to get out. So we have one community, and I'm reaching out to the local elected officials to make sure, like yesterday, the mayor of Grand Isle 2 days ago wanted to keep it open. There were people on the beaches. They decided to close and asked me to close the park. So yesterday we closed Grand Isle. So I'm going to work with the local elected officials. A lot of the local people want to go use the parks, and as long as they can do it in a safe manner and keep their distance, we're going to take each individual park and community and do what those people want to do. And it's a thing we're going to have to work through.
And listener notes, I don't know if I said it. I probably did since I'm being corrected. It wouldn't be a 5% increase. It'd be a 500% increase. Okay, if we go from 20 to 100 in a week, which is probably about what it will be, hopefully not more than 100 cases. But, Governor, do you think this social distancing will work?
I think it's definitely going to bring the numbers down. The problem is we're testing way more people than we were a week ago. So this week I think you're going to see a dramatic increase. And I hope that the next week we will see those numbers taper off, because we'll get our hands around really how many people are infected and see the numbers start to drop off, so we can see light at the end of the tunnel and start rebooking conventions and groups for several weeks or months down the road to get our economy back. So I think that's a best case scenario, just in my opinion, and hopefully we'll see those numbers next week start to go down.
And in a state which thrives when the oil and gas industry is perking and thrives when tourism is perking, and both of them were doing well a month ago or 6 weeks ago, we could be hit hardest of all.
Absolutely. You know, last year, our last year record, 2018, $1.9 billion in taxes brought in by tourists. That's over $1,000 per family. You know, we were on record to have another record year in 2019. It's going to be a devastating blow. We set up a portal yesterday, had a conference call with our congressman and the tourism industry to start collecting all the data of closed events, canceled events. But even even the people that are sitting there trying to keep the conventions booked down the road and communicating with those people that have relationships at all the convention and visitor bureaus, their salaries are predicated on that hotel motel tax. So if those CBVs go away, to get those people back that have the relations with booking these events from all over the country, they'll be out of work as well.
Well, and we're 155 days away from the start, the kickoff of the LSU football season, which actually comes a little later this year than usual, September 5th. And, you know, I bought into this story 1918 that the season was canceled in 1918 because of the World War I. Well, the real reason the season was canceled was because of the pandemic. Do you think we may lose football, both from the National Football League and the Saints, and college football with LSU? Is that in peril now that the Olympics have gone?
I would hate to think that. You know, I'm still optimistic that this thing will get under control by April 13th, and we'll see a downside, and we'll be able to get Louisiana back moving again. But I think back to when I stood on a levee in Plaquemines Parish after Katrina and wondered if it would ever come back. Louisiana is an incredible, helping their neighbors, their resistance, their pride, their strength. If any state will come out of this, Louisiana, who has been battle tested many times, will bounce back and be better than ever. I got no doubt in that after seeing it through five hurricanes and the oil spill, as all states are suffering. But the people of Louisiana just have something special that I believe will bring us back and bring us out of this.
Well, Governor, we thank you, and I know you're a busy fellow, and keep the faith and keep healthy if you can, and don't take any chances. We'll be talking again, I'm sure. Thanks for your time today.
Stay safe, my friend. God bless.
Billy Nungesser. And coming next, we're going to hear from the remarkable actress, Lee Purcell, who has a long and distinguished career in Hollywood and elsewhere, and spent many of her formative years in our neighboring state of Arkansas. She will talk about today being the 90th birthday, the 90th anniversary of the birth of her dear friend Steve McQueen. Also, she lost another friend over the weekend in Kenny Rogers. The great singer died at the age of 81. We'll be back with more Talk Louisiana after this brief pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757 is your number, and you can always send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. We're visiting now with the actress Lee Purcell, joining us from Los Angeles, where it is 7:33. She recently had the honor of completing a starring role in the upcoming feature film Carol of the Bells for director Joey Travolta. We talked with her about that a few months ago, but and we'll get her take on her most recent projects before we leave. But Lee Purcell was a dear friend of one Steve McQueen, one of the finest actors of his generation and one of the greatest talents to ever inhabit the big screen. And he would have been 90 years old today. Hard to imagine. Lee, of course, was much younger than he. But Steve McQueen died at 50. 40 years ago this November, he passed away. And he left an immense legacy in Hollywood and in the culture, where he is still revered, perhaps more now than ever before. And, Lee, I think you could say he's had staying power. Lee Purcell?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, there we go.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine now.
Okay, great. Yes, he's a cultural icon, and which I wonder how he would have felt about that. Probably enjoyed it. Probably scoffed at it a bit. But, yeah, today's his 90th birthday, which is incredibly shocking.
It is, because you knew him when he was a much younger man, and he died so suddenly. He made two films the year he died. He did not go out without giving it a big fight, dying from mesothelioma. And,
right.
And were you in contact with him at the end of his life?
No, not really. He was in Mexico with his wife trying to survive, so I didn't want to intrude.
What about him made him so special? He said himself that he did not have classic leading man looks and that he was not a method actor, but nonetheless, he is right there with the greats of the big screen.
I think with Steve, it was he just had an abundance of charisma that not many people have, and he was also what used to be called a man's man. I don't know if that term is even used anymore, but he was he didn't tolerate any nonsense. So I think all of that made him just very charismatic, magnetic.
Well, the 1968 Ford Mustang GT from the film Bullet, 1968, sold a couple of months ago at $3.4 million. That tells you about Steve McQueen, and he wanted that car back at one point.
I heard that.
He wanted it and didn't get it, and the guy who held it made a fortune off it.
Wow.
But that film is the one that is his signature film. But as you know, he was in Papillon. He was in a lot of films that are some of the best films that were ever made.
He was, and he was also nominated for an Oscar for the Sand Pebbles, and he was and he did, you know, he was in Lee Strasberg's studio, actor studio. So he was highly trained, and he knew what he was doing, and he imparted that to me since he mentored me and put me in my first film role. So I learned a lot, you know, from Steve, and I'm always grateful, and I don't forget. He was the opening of the door for me.
And you stated, Lee, that he was the best of the best, and you worked with many of the great ones. He was perhaps just a cut above, and that's the way it works. He was spectacular in his own way, and he was better than some of the great ones that you were associated with.
I don't like to say better because that's, I don't know, kind of rude, but he was different. He was just different, and I think that's why his legacy in these 40 years since he's been gone has just grown. And even young people, you know, who weren't even born when he died, they idolized Steve McQueen because he was the coolest guy on the block. He really was.
He was indeed. Was he a happy man?
Well, I don't know. You know, I wasn't privy to his intimate personal life at home. He was, you know, more like a father to me. So he wouldn't have, I mean, we did talk a lot about life and about growing up, and we had kind of similar troubled childhoods, and although I think mine was more affluent after a certain point than his was, but I think he was happy when he had power. I think that was who he was, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, he was a very, very hardworking man, and everything he got was because he worked for it. And that was a lesson that he imparted to me, that, you know, there's no free lunch. So I think he was happy.
He would have had a great career beyond his days. He left us at 50. It's a shame because I'm sure he would have transferred well into a character actor if he had so chosen to. Now, you knew also Kenny Rogers, who died over the weekend, and in the midst of all that's going on in the world, his death didn't get nearly the play it would have.
I agree.
But at 81, he left quite an impact on the world of music. He also was a film star. But more about his music, and you and I are old enough to remember when he was with the First Edition.
Oh, yeah. I had an interesting conversation with him about his various cycles of fame, as he called it. And I remember he said to me one day, you know, I had this huge career with the First Edition, and then that went away after I don't know how many years. And then I was like nobody. And now I have this huge career again, but it'll go away again, because it's cyclical. And he was right. And he said, but it'll come back. And he was right. It did. So he just kind of rolled with it.
Well, he had a number one song, Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town, written by Mel Tillis, and another number one, Islands in the Stream, with Dolly Parton, written by the Bee Gees, and that shows the kind of versatility that Kenny Rogers had. And he grew up in a Houston housing project, certainly didn't...
I did not know that.
Yeah, born in 1938, wow. Too, so he...
That was a rough time.
Yeah.
Before the war and...
His father was a carpenter and an alcoholic, and he overcame that, and he had more than a half century on the stage and did it very, very well. Now, a few months ago, we lost Kirk Douglas, and
sounded like an obituary.
Well, I know, but you knew him, and you were on the set with him and John Schneider and Eddie Macon's run. John said he loved your character in the film the three of you were in.
Oh, and, I love John.
And,
he's great.
He's a good man, and he lives here. And he's about to turn 60 years old, which is hard to imagine, but he's...
I know, but...
But he is.
If you're lucky.
Yeah.
You do.
Yeah, that's true.
Steve didn't.
That's
true. You know,
Steve,
but John will, and Kenny will. Yeah, Kirk, I'm in my office at my house, and I have on my bulletin board a note from Kirk just, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 months ago. And it's a really sweet note. And I was very surprised to receive it. And it's something that I will always treasure.
Well, and you were continuing. And Lee, as I mentioned, is younger, much younger than Kirk and Kenny Rogers. But you've had a long career that started very early in life.
Yes, I'm very fortunate.
Started
very
really
fortunate.
As a teenager, didn't you?
I started at five.
Well, that's preteen. So, last time I checked.
Very preteen. Yeah, I started at five. We moved a lot in my younger years and my childhood, and due to various circumstances. And we were in Millington, Tennessee, where we were on the naval base. And somehow, and I have no idea how it happened, I ended up on a local regional TV show, and I just loved it. And I'd already started modeling at three when we were living in Dallas. I was a toddler model for Neiman Marcus, the flagship store there, and then started doing dance at three. So I guess I was kind of bored as a kid, so I figured I'd better start working. So at five, I started doing that TV show, and I did it on and off for about 8 years. You know, whenever I would have an idea, I'd call them up and say, oh, I think I could do this dance, or I could sing this song, or if they had an idea, they'd call me up. And so I wasn't contracted or anything, and I did not make much money, that's for sure. But it was a really good training ground. I did it until I was about 13, on and off.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned Carol of the Bells, and it did open in December, but still has relevance today. You were with Donna Mills and Joey Travolta's film. We've got about 30 seconds, Lee, but I know you're quite proud of this work.
I am very proud of it, and actually right now it's been released on DVD, available at Amazon and Target, and also it's on all the streaming platforms. And since we're all stuck at home, hey, why not watch Carol of the Bells? It's a really good movie and has a fantastic cast.
And, yeah, two exquisite veteran performers who are continuing to do it and look fabulous on the screen, Donna Mills and Lee Purcell. So congratulations on your continuing success.
Thanks, Jim.
And thank you for joining us early in the great city of Los Angeles today.
Thank you, and please stay healthy and stay safe.
We'll do it. God bless you. Lee Purcell, one of the best. We'll be back after this brief timeout with more Talk Louisiana. We're slated to hear from the founder of PETA, Ingrid Newkirk, after this quick timeout on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. And as we know, the coronavirus has had a devastating economic impact in this country. And today, based on an agreement that has apparently been agreed to by both houses of Congress and by both parties, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is responding well, up 1,415 points in the early trading, 7.6%. So finally a good day. Let's just hope it holds. But with us to talk about the world at large, and for those of us who really, I guess all of us who are experiencing social distancing, and some who, of course, are spending all day in their homes, animals become more and more a part of our lives. And with us is the foremost authority on that and in our world, I think, Ingrid Newkirk, who founded People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, the largest animal rights organization in the world, in 1980 with affiliates in 8 countries. She is the author of Save the Animals, and her latest work is Animal Kind, Remarkable Discoveries About Animals and Revolutionary New Ways to Show Them Compassion. Good morning, Ingrid Newkirk.
Hello.
It's nice to hear you. Well, let's start about your amazing voyage. It's been 40 years since PETA was formed, and there are people who like you a lot and don't like you a lot. Are there some misconceptions about your organization?
Oh, yes, indeed. I think so. People sometimes are embarrassed by us because we tend to try to penetrate the media cycle and get people to pay attention to what is a very important social cause, cruelty to animals, by doing gimmicky things sometimes. And by putting the hard facts in front of people, things, pictures, videos people don't want to see. And that makes people who exploit animals for a living very upset, like the furriers and so on, and the people who used to run Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus, but we've managed to get that closed down. And so, yes, people say, oh, well, you know, I agree with what they're saying, but they're a little bit too extreme. And our thought is, what's extreme is what animals suffer every day, often because of people's unthinking habits or what they buy and so on. And we need to say it's not pleasant to see some of the things we show, but it's reality. It's the truth. It's the hard facts. We're all grown up now, so we can change some of the things we do.
What was the catalyst? What got you to start PETA?
Oh, I have always cared about animals. When I was born, there was already a dog in my house, so we grew up basically like brother and sister. You know, we played together. He would sleep on the bed. I would sleep in his dog basket. And funny enough, both of us got car sick at exactly the same time. My mother would have to stop the car, and we would both have to get out. So I never thought of him as being other. I just thought of him as being my pal. And so when I grew up, I think I had that sort of attitude, except I'm 70 now. Just look at the crow's feet. I grew up in a household where we said we loved animals, but back then it was harder to connect the dots. So my father and I basically ate our way through the animal kingdom. He loved everything that came from an animal, loved to eat liver and brains, calves' brains on toast, you name it. And so I didn't see any conflict with loving animals, not kicking the dog, not starving the horse, and supporting slaughterhouses and so on. But later on, I became an inspector of laboratories and a cruelty law enforcement officer. And there I saw, for the first time in my life, what exactly animals go through. Not only pain, but fear. I mean, really horrible fear of what's about to happen to them. And I thought, I can't support this. And so I started to, in a very amateur way, change what I was doing, what I was wearing. I had a fur coat when I was 19. And as I say, I ate my way through the animal kingdom. And I changed what I was doing bit by bit. And I thought, lots of people are like me. They care about animals. They don't like cruelty, but they don't know. And so we started PETA to do two things. One was to show people what was going on behind closed doors and in places they would never probably step foot in. And the second was to make it easy for them to change by doing the homework for them, showing them all the compassionate choices they had in life.
We're visiting with Ingrid Newkirk. She is the founder of PETA. Their book is Animal Kind, Remarkable Discoveries About Animals and Revolutionary New Ways to Show Them Compassion. Lots and lots of testimonials for this. Too many to read, but here's one from Alec Baldwin saying, animals are our neighbors on the planet. This book shows how we can become better neighbors. What are some of the ways we can do, act to be better neighbors to our animals?
Well, I think the very first thing is to know who our neighbors are. And I say who deliberately because some people treat animals as if they're tables and chairs, as if they're inanimate, that they don't have feelings. And yet, of course, when we get to know them, we know that they experience love and joy. They grieve. You see elephants cradling the bones of elephants who have died. You see dogs pining for people they miss. I mean, they're just emotional creatures the way we are too. And you see people dismissing small animals, and that has never been a good reason. You know, there are small mammals, the way there are medium-sized and big mammals, and some are bigger than us, some are mice and rats, and yet they all feel worry and pain, and they all want to be free, and they don't want to be killed in painful ways. So the first part of the book sets you up for the second part of the book. The first part of the book says, mm-hmm. you know, here, look at elephants, how amazing they are. They can pick up a paperclip with that trunk. They can use it as a snorkel when they go swimming, and they love to swim if they're able to. And they can wrap their trunks around their friends and comfort anyone who's ailing with that trunk because it's so full of sensitive nerves. And it says, look at the birds. You know, we have, I think, a 45% divorce rate among human beings in this country, sad to say. But birds partner for life, and geese and swans and even the despised pigeon will be with that life partner 95% of the time.
All right. 877-217-5757. Patrick in Innisfail Estates has been waiting. We'll get to a few calls, I hope. Patrick, we start with you with Ingrid Newkirk. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, nobody supports animal abuse, but why is it okay for, like, you to own a dog when you were a little kid, but it's not okay for Ringling Brothers to own an elephant, or for responsible pet owners to own a tiger or an elephant? Why are you trying to outlaw private ownership of exotic animals? Wouldn't that lead to their extinction?
No, Patrick. I mean, they weren't extinct before we started to take one here and one there and put them in a backyard pen or a basement. We can't give wild animals like elephants a proper life. I mean, elephants are herd animals. You can't just keep one or two or three. I mean, they're a matriarchy, and they like to walk great distances, sometimes tens of miles in a day. They need to be where they were naturally born and put, and so conserving where they are is what we do if we care about them. We don't even have to love them. We just have to respect them for who they are. And what you find is zoos like the Detroit Zoo are saying, we recognize now, their zoologists are saying, we recognize now we can't provide even minimally for these animals' needs, their behaviors, what they is natural to them. So we're going to stop bringing them into captivity.
How many people around the world are part of PETA?
We've got about 6.5 million members and supporters now, and offices in 8 countries, each country having, of course, as you probably can guess, different problems to deal with.
Well, the book from Simon & Schuster is Animal Kind, Remarkable Discoveries About Animals and Revolutionary New Ways to Show Them Compassion. Congratulations on your book, and if anybody is passionate about what you do, I don't know of anybody more so than you, Ingrid, so I'm sure many will commend you for the work you've done over the last 4 decades as the founder of PETA. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good talking with you. And 877-217-5757. We have not discussed today the new cluster of cases of coronavirus found in Donaldsonville. 5 cases have been confirmed at a retirement home. And, Phil, I don't know if you were calling about Chateau de Ville and Donaldsonville, but obviously 34 deaths in Louisiana, 1,172 positive cases, and now 41 parishes, 41 of the 64. The numbers are getting bigger here and everywhere. Your thoughts, Phil, in Jefferson Terrace.
Yes, sir. I'd like to know, I know there are a great number of people who are getting over this, who are getting well and getting past having the disease. Now, are they contagious? I mean, can they give other people the disease, or are they now immune, and can they go back out and be out in the world and don't have to be do the distance? I'd really be curious about what, you know, what that happened, or if there's a place where they can go and not, you know, and do things that really need to be done.
All right. We'll be talking with medical professionals, but there are people who have tested positive who are now testing negative, and presumably once you test negative, you're not a danger to anybody else. And in most cases, when people have a virus, they are okay from that point forward, but we are uncertain right now about this one. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.